Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Once upon a time in America, dad worked, mom stayed home, and divorce meant alimony for life. Yes, there were variations, but that was the big picture. Now, women make up half the workforce. The economy's crunching everyone, and marriage itself has changed. More and more states are taking a second look at alimony laws, at who pays what and for how long. This hour, On Point, we're talking about changing paychecks, changing roles, changing families, and the American way of alimony. You can join the conversation. Who should pay? How much? For how long? What's your new age alimony story? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me in the studio now is Jennifer Levitz, staff writer at The Wall Street Journal. She wrote the eye-opening article, The New Art of Alimony, that got us thinking. Jennifer, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
What is going on out there? I mean, we kind of know what alimony was. Men tended to be the breadwinners. Of course, a lot of women worked, but nevertheless, women tended much more years back to stay home. When they split up, it sort of made sense. What's happening now?
Well, I think that people are tired of paying alimony to someone that they think has equal earning potential, men and women.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they think it's not fair. And it's really starting to hit home now in the middle of in the midst of an economic downturn or end of it or however you want to look at it. Times are tight and men are out of work. Women are out of work or fear they will be. And so they're looking to, they're trying to go back to court, and courts are seeing a huge rush of people trying to go back and modify their alimony.
Mm-hmm. Too much, I can't pay, and it doesn't make sense anymore is the argument that's being made.
Not just that I can't afford these payments, but why should I have to pay? This person, they can go out and get a job just as easy as I can.
Guys have been saying this, not only guys, but guys for a long time. But you're writing that a lot of states and legislatures are picking this up now. This isn't just, moaning in the wind anymore.
That's right. A number of states are starting to look at these laws. There's a few theories as why. I think there's a lot of activist groups are starting to lobby. There's legislators themselves are starting to go through divorces or have gone through divorces and experience
the burn
and what they see in the flawed alimony system firsthand.
And what about a younger generation who didn't ever grow up in this sort of a leave it to beaver cleaver days? I wonder if they just have a different outlook on marriage and alimony and who ought to pay what if a marriage breaks up.
I think they do. I think a lot of younger people I've talked to think that it's somewhat insulting to think that a woman would need to be supported for the rest of her life or a man. Why would you, that when you divorce, the costs and the benefits of marriage end and you go your separate ways and that's that.
Women are more heavily represented than men in college now. Women have taken a little bit less of a hit in this recession from the numbers I'm looking at.
Mm-hmm.
So they can go out there and earn and are proud to do that.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, we should make clear, this is different from child support.
That's right. This is alimony.
Define alimony for us.
Alimony is, so it's different than child support, a whole different thing. And alimony is, some states call it spousal support, and it's just meant to be a stream of income for the dependent spouse. And the issue is how long should it go on? What is it for? And it's, nobody can ever really define exactly what it's for. Is it sort of a lifelong dividend for this time you spent in this marriage?
You invested in a relationship and so it pays off forever?
Or is it a transitional stream of payment to help a person get on his or her feet?
Mm-hmm. Or a supplement to keep the spouse with a lesser earning power living in the style to which he or she is accustomed.
That's right.
Now, it's not only now that people are just sort of thinking, let's just divide this and not worry about it. You tell the story of Paul and Teresa Taylor way back when they divorced and they had a pretty amicable split, but it's kind of an incredible story as it unfolds.
Right. Paul and Teresa Taylor, they divorced in 1982 and they divided their assets.
They'd been married 17 years at that time, but that's 25 years ago, more.
Yes. So they'd been married 17 years. They had three children. they were living in Massachusetts. He worked for the Boston Public Works Department. She had a job, a full-time job. So when they split, they were both self-sufficient, and they split their assets 50-50. Mm-hmm. She got the family home. He got the cottage
weekend
on
house.
The Cape. Mm-hmm. They shared custody. She had full physical custody, but he took the kids on weekends, he says, and summers, and he paid child support.
He's 68.
Right.
And she's 64. She's,
yes. So about a year ago, a judge, she went to court, and she's had a rough time. She had an illness, and her company where she had worked for 38 years went bankrupt. She didn't have retirement income. She had to declare personal bankruptcy for her bills. And she went back to the judge and said, I do need alimony.
From a man I haven't been married to since 1982 who hasn't paid alimony in all that time.
That's right.
But she's in trouble now. They had a long-term relationship then.
They also, it's interesting to note, on their divorce agreement, they specifically waive alimony.
So, but the judge nevertheless looked at this and said, on the basis of your relationship then and your need now, what?
Yes, yes. There are allowances in the law where you can go back if the one spouse is in danger of going on public services and becoming a ward of the state, that you can go back to the other spouse and reopen that divorce agreement. Also, many of these agreements, the fine print will say, until further order of the court, or mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. So she was able to get alimony. And then also in sort of reopening that divorce case, the judge said, and furthermore, his pension should have been divided at the time. So here he is, 68 years old.
Remarried,
mm-hmm. retired. Mm-hmm. He's got a pension of a take-home pension of about $3,600 a month. And from what he's, about $400 a week of that, so $1,600 is going to his ex-wife from 25 years ago.
That's got to be an incredible bolt from the blue. You quote him saying, this is insane.
Yes.
I'm sure his new wife thinks something similar. I mean, this really cuts into their earning power now, but that was a relationship he had, and this is what the judge is laying down.
He told me, he thought this is never going to fly. I mean, this isn't going to happen, and when it did, he's declared personal bankruptcy himself. So this whole situation, you've got two people declared bankruptcy. He says he's sensitive to her plight, but it's just so long ago, it's not his problem.
But this story is public because they were brought in to testify before the Massachusetts state legislature in this case, which is thinking about changing the parameters for alimony.
Yes. Well, Mr. Taylor didn't actually come forward and testify, but he has joined a group called Reform Massachusetts Alimony Now. That's not the exact mm-hmm. name for it, but they're an activist group, and they are lobbying the state. And they have got 72 sponsors behind a bill that would really dramatically overhaul the state's alimony laws.
And you've got big pushes for this kind of thing in Ohio, Florida, Arizona, Georgia, North Carolina.
Yes. Yeah. So you're starting to see either legislators propose laws or activist groups really getting the attention, bar associations looking at it. There's some court cases that are pending, that are being watched nationally.
And what do they want to do? Do they want to change the law because women have more earning power now? Is
yes.
that the general shift? And what would that mean?
I think, right, I think that states are starting to look at laws that would consider that both parties have earning power. And
they don't already? Surely they do. I mean, it's not just presumed that it's the husband in the law that will pay, is it? Isn't it the greater income earner or something?
Well, it's not. I think they do look at a person having earning power. But the flaw in the laws, as I understand from the reform people who want to reform it, is that there doesn't seem to be an end to alimony in a lot of states. So certainly, it's understandable that somebody has maybe stayed home more with the children and worked 3 days a week and so forth. But how long is that supposed to go on? In Massachusetts, it's not uncommon to see a divorce agreement that says you must pay until death.
California, same.
Yes, yes. And
Texas, quite different.
That's right.
Texas, 3 years?
Yes. Yeah. Texas is considered to have the least generous alimony laws. And in Texas, you have to be married, first of all, for 10 years. And then
to get any, to qualify.
To get any. Mm-hmm. Now, there's exceptions to all these laws, obviously, if the judge thinks, you know. But so then you have to show you really can't work for some reason, either because of a child maybe with special needs and you can't work, or you have certain issues. Then if you do get alimony, it's about 3 years.
You're a 20, 30-something. Looks like you're married from what I can see. Does alimony make sense to you? Does it seem like an artifact from a different time? How do you look at it?
I think it does make sense for a certain period of time. I can't see where it should go on for years and years. I think that,
Do you think your mother might have felt differently? Your friends?
She might have, you know. She might have. Although my mother, you know, I think that if you see someone getting divorced now, and a lot of marriages today unfortunately do end soon or early. So if you're married for 10 years, should you pay alimony for 30? That doesn't seem.
And what about with the second spouse, if there is one, or the third, if there is one?
Right.
And what about their interests versus the interests of the first? As if the alimony can come back and done you 25 years. After the marriage, it's really interesting, sort of legal question intersecting with changing social structures and changing presence of women in the working world. Jennifer Levitz with the Wall Street Journal, please stand by. We've got to take a short break right here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Don't bring it in person. Send it by mail. If you don't straighten up, you're going to land in jail. Alimony pop. Stop acting like a clown.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about updating alimony in a time when women make up half the workforce. More men are getting laid off. Divorce is no fault. And the economy is crunching everyone. Jennifer Levitz is with us from the Wall Street Journal. She wrote a piece called The New Art of Alimony. Big story about what's going on. Lots of states contemplating significant changes in the law as the workforce changes. You can join the conversation online as well, onpointradio.org. And here's a comment from Rebecca. She says she stayed at home with her children for 15 years, was divorced after her husband had an affair. Her attorney informed her she could get alimony for a few years, but was then expected to get a job and take care of herself. She writes, "If you ask me, this no-fault divorce business is for the birds. Women will pay a price as long as raising children is not valued as real work." We'll look at that issue. Joining us right now from Gainesville, Florida is Danaya Wright, professor at University of Florida Levin School of Law. She teaches the history of family law. Professor Wright, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So what's going on with alimony? Does it still make sense when everybody's in the workforce? Do you see a big update coming in these pushes in state legislatures?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me that there is an update coming, but I do think there is certainly a great need for alimony to continue. Alimony has a very long history, and given the incredibly gendered aspects of the law, the history of the law, history of marriage, women had so many constraints, married women, so many constraints during the period of marriage. It was a period called coverture that Blackstone described as, upon marriage, a man and woman become one, and that one is the man.
okay.
Right? She had
Maybe then.
Right. Well, and the relics of coverture have not disappeared. And, of course, with divorce is a fairly recent creation of the law. We've only had it for about 150 years. And so we have a lot of protections for a spouse at death. We have equitable distribution of property upon divorce. But what you tend to see in the cases where alimony is awarded is that the wife in particular who is given alimony was usually the first wife. At a very young stage in the couple's economic growth and development. So there's a huge investment of human capital.
In the spouse's education or early career years, whatever.
That's right. And so what you see is that earnings grow exponentially as
later on
workers age. And so somebody who may have had a 17-year marriage like the Taylors, and then 25 years of being divorced, and yet her contribution to the marriage is responsible for perhaps two-fifths of his retirement.
From that very early investment that they made together as a young couple. I can see that line of thinking. We've got callers with different perspectives on this. If you'll stand by, Danae Wright, let me go to Jennifer in Framingham, Massachusetts. Jennifer, you're on the air. What's your story?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My story is that I was divorced about 7 years ago, and at the time I was staying home with two young children. Okay. I had quit a very successful career to stay home and be with my family and supported my husband through school and through his career. Mm-hmm. And when we got divorced, along with child support, I did win alimony payments from him. But one of the really important things to me in our divorce agreement was that there was an understanding that those alimony payments would go away at some point.
You wanted them to go away.
Whether I
remarried or not.
I wanted them to go away.
Why?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because I feel like I am a strong, young, educated person who should be responsible for herself. I have always been independent. I've always been responsible for taking care of myself. And the idea that I would be taken care of by someone, you know, never mind my ex-husband, who I didn't want to have any,
anything to do with. What about your investment in those kids and those years away from your career, Jennifer?
Well, that was part of the deal, is that, you know, that the agreement was set up so that my children would not suffer financially, that I would have resources to be able to retire, but that at some point I would be responsible for taking care of myself, and I can't wait for that. You know, I'm since remarried, so it's not an issue anymore, but even if I had not remarried, I knew that that day was coming, and it was a real motivator for me. I went out and went back to school, and I'm becoming a teacher, and I knew that I would be able to be self-sufficient, and I think the, you know, concept of long-term alimony can be a real disincentive for some people to go out and be productive and be self-sufficient.
There's a very 21st century view. Stand by with that, if you would. I want to put it to Danae Wright. Is that ahistorical, Danae? Is that a new American woman speaking there? Is that a common perspective or not?
I think it's a common perspective in terms of her desire not to be supported because we now have such a strong socialization that the girls and boys can do the same thing. They can both have careers. They can both have families. And yet what you saw in that relationship is she still took off time to raise the children. Her career, when she gets it back online, is going to be at a lower level. And ultimately, in her lifetime, she will earn less than her husband will. She will have a smaller retirement fund. She'll probably have a smaller life insurance policy. And so there are a number of factors that have kicked in to cause her total wealth to be diminished vis-a-vis his,
But she's smart and looking at it and saying, I don't want that. Are you saying she's naive, or is there just a different perspective emerging here, I don't know, generationally?
Well, I think that's perfectly fine if that's the position she wants to take. I think that we, as in the legal institutions, judges and lawyers, need to look at every individual couple differently, give them individual treatment, consider all of the various factors, and in particular look at the different earning potential that each party has. I think that's our biggest. That's the biggest issue in these cases.
Jennifer, do you think 25 years from now you might be coming back to tap your first ex-husband, and coming back to tap him for a little bit of his pension?
No, because when we divorced, that was part of our divorce agreement. I got more of the family assets up front. I got more of the house assets. Mm-hmm. I got a bigger part of the retirement assets because we knew that that was going to happen. We knew that my earning potential would go down. We knew that my retirement assets would be impacted. So that was all settled up front so that there's no more going back to the well. You know, that part was figured out and done, and now it's my turn to go out and take care of myself once I'm done raising my children, and I know that I will be able to do that, and I wish him well. And if he does well for himself, that's good news for my children. But I think I was thinking about that when we went into the divorce and was compensating for that in the complete divorce agreement.
So you're off in your own career, in a new marriage, and goodbye to alimony. Thanks for calling. Jennifer Levitz, are you hearing a new generational perspective there in our callers?
I think so. I do. She does represent a lot of the younger people that I've talked to that just sort of want to be when they get divorced, they want to be divorced, and they want to just move on. And in some way, I think they see alimony as connecting them to a person that they, you know, they no longer want to.
Right. So cut that cord, and off we go. Tom in Newington, Connecticut. Tom, you're on the air.
Yes, I am. Thank you very much.
Hi.
For taking my call.
Yeah.
It seems to me that there ought to be some sort of guidelines in place for alimony, something along the lines of the person making more money pays, say, 40% of the difference in salaries between the two for a period of time not to exceed, say, the length of the marriage plus 2 years or something like that.
Okay.
That way, a person who is married for a year or two, that doesn't have a free ride for the rest of the life. But if it's a 40-year marriage, you ought to be entitled to substantial help down the way. Your earning potential is substantially lower than it might have been.
Right. So get a formula in there that makes sense and that isn't entirely open ended. Tom, let us hold that if you would, and let me go to Nashville, Tennessee. We've got Mark, who I believe does some divorce lawyering. Mark, you're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear, and I hope you just heard Tom in Connecticut saying, you know, maybe we can apply a neat formula to this that puts some end date on this. What are you seeing in your own work, Mark?
Well, what I'm seeing in Tennessee in the past 25 years that I've been practicing law, the divorce laws have become less paternalistic toward women. Now in Tennessee, we have written into the law rehabilitative alimony. It's been that way for about the past 10 years. The rehabilitative alimony is presumed to last less than 5 or 6 years, mm-hmm. and it's of limited amount, so that now it's not a continual cycle of having people have it until they remarry or until death. It's a specific period of time. Now, that creates some interesting scenarios, one of which is, well, if a woman gets remarried during the period of time of rehabilitative alimony, does it cut off? The answer is yes and no. You can go back to court and have it cut off, but it's not automatic.
But it's not lifelong from the get-go either. It's a sense of kind of a transitional payment of alimony.
That's correct. Let me give you an example. I had a lady last year. I didn't try this case, but I did the appeal. And she had gotten rehabilitative alimony, for about 5 years at about $500 a month. She'd been married to this gentleman for about 25 years, and he was making well over $100,000 a year, and her earning capacity was something like $30,000 a year. And the Court of Appeals said, well, you know, he cheated on her, and fault is a factor, even though we're not punishing him here. But we're going to go ahead and increase her alimony award by about a factor of three. So mm-hmm. now she gets about $1,500 a month, but still it's only for the next 5 years. So even though the amount increased, the duration didn't increase because it's the rehabilitative alimony. Now, if you have someone who is, say, disabled mm-hmm. and not able to be rehabilitated, you're not going to get rehabilitative alimony. You're going to get some sort of long-term award.
Right.
Alimony in Toledo, which is a lump sum award based on the amount of property that the people have together, or you're going to get alimony in futuro, which is the basically death or remarriage type award.
Right, and that would be longer term, and that makes sense. A little Tennessee report there. And thanks for that, Mark. I want to bring in right now from Columbus, Ohio, Douglas Doherty. He practices family law at Doherty, Henneman, and Snedeker in Columbus. Specializes in family relations law. Counselor Doherty, thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm very well. Do you see the changes in our society beginning to impact the way we go about thinking about alimony?
Tom, I think probably two of the biggest changes I've seen in my career is, number one, more men seeking alimony from their ex-wives and more men getting alimony from their ex-wives.
Because the women, their ex-wives, make more or as much as they do or did?
Well, if they're only making the same as the men, in Ohio they probably wouldn't get anything. But I handle many cases where the women have higher incomes than the men. You know, we've seen a big social change in the last 20 to 30 years in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Women are more active in the job force. They're more successful in terms of earning ability. And we also see more and more husbands staying home and caring for the children. Now, this is the beginning of a change. I don't want to overstate it, but I certainly do not remember seeing very many men coming to my office requesting spousal support 25 years ago when I started my practice, but now I see them all the time.
Mm. Douglas Doherty, does the law discriminate on the basis of gender? When men seek alimony, are judges or the law just as open to providing it as if it were the other way around?
I think you have to look at the law on the books and the law in practice. In terms of the law on the books, in Ohio and I'm sure in every other state, people are treated equally regarding their gender. However, the reality is we have individual judges who administer and apply the law, and while no judge would probably admit it, I'm sure that somewhere in their heart of hearts, some of the judges have strong personal feelings that relate to gender and whether certain individuals should be receiving alimony or not. I think that there probably are some judges who subconsciously or perhaps even consciously think that men are not as deserving as women when it comes to alimony.
Douglas Doherty, I wonder if patterns of marriage have also changed what goes on with alimony. I mean, if you go back some decades, people may divorce more easily now. They may marry again, I don't know, more quickly. They may be married more times. Has that changed patterns in alimony assignment?
I think it has. I think the primary variable there is when people are married a shorter period of time, in the eyes of most judges in most states, they're less worthy to receive alimony. In other words, with a very short-term marriage, 5 years or less, typically in Ohio, and I would imagine in many other states, there would be no alimony awarded. And only once a marriage gets above 5 to 10 years do judges start seriously looking at whether alimony should be awarded. So to the extent that we're having shorter marriages and more frequent marriages, I'd say that does impact alimony. We probably see less of it awarded, and for a smaller amount and for a shorter period of time.
Jennifer Levitz, you tell the story of Brenda Caggiano,
Caggiano,
a woman being hit for alimony, and a woman who's 70 years old.
Yes, that's right. Brenda and her husband, Bob, divorced in 2003, and he left her, both agree, he left home, and they divided their assets 50-50, and she was making more at the time. She was a school teacher, first grade teacher, mm-hmm. and he
rich though.
No, he's an accountant, and at the time he both of them he acknowledges he was not work. He was kind of underemployed. He was doing tax returns and not making that much money. So the judge awarded him $125 a week, so $500 a month, for until his death, her death, or his remarriage.
Awarded him that from her on her teacher's salary.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And so she pays him $500 a month. And now what's interesting there is that he has since moved in with his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And his girlfriend works full time. And his house is mortgage free. So one of the things they're looking to do in Massachusetts and
meanwhile, she's in trouble. I mean, she's now on a pension.
Right. She's 70. She's now retired. And she has a house, a good-sized house that is becoming difficult to take care of. And she's having to hire people to fix the roof.
You quote her saying, it's a disgrace that this man is taking my money when he's perfectly capable of supporting himself. We used to hear that the other way around. We used to hear the man saying that.
Right, right. She feels like he could work more. He could, you know, he's a CPA. He could take on more clients. He doesn't need her money. And it upsets her that she's giving money to someone who she thinks doesn't need it.
Then they are right that the lines are just not quite so clear anymore here. It's a very mixed up fabric of married life we've got today in this country.
Absolutely. And I think we should look at the uniform. There's a uniform law that's been adopted in many states on alimony, and it essentially gives judges the discretion to look to all sorts of factors, the duration of the marriage, age and physical and emotional condition of the parties, financial resources, etc. So there's a lot of flexibility for judges to make these decisions. Mm.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about updating alimony in a time when women make up half the workforce, when more men are getting laid off, when divorce is widely no fault, and the economy is crunching everybody. You can join the conversation with Douglas Doherty, practices family law in Columbus, Ohio. Danaya Wright, she is a professor at the University of Florida Levin School of Law, teaches the history of family law there. And Jennifer Levitz of the Wall Street Journal is here. Let's get a call from John in Brewster, New York. John, you're on the air.
Hi, hello, Tom.
Hi, what do you know?
Oh, well, I'm just calling up on your alimony and your issues of support in regards to, you know, a modern society,
mm-hmm.
and the professor down from Florida giving us a historical perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is I believe there is some sense of gender discrimination, because I was married for quite some time when I was a homeowner, and my wife walked out, took our kids, left the state. She was the income earner, a licensed healthcare professional.
Mm-hmm.
I was a high school graduate, and her income was, you know, almost 1.5 times mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost my house. I paid 40% of daycare add-on so she could continue her professional career. And it just seems that in my case, you know, I can barely hold on to, you know, a one-bedroom apartment 10 years later,
mm-hmm.
because of all the costs that I've been paying out with interest, et cetera, et cetera. And I just recently remarried,
mm-hmm.
A few years ago, because I wasn't even seeing my children. The mother of my children was not even letting me see them, even though I had, you know, full joint custody. And since the divorce 10 years ago, just paying thousands and thousands of dollars every year to go back to court to see my kids.
When she was better off than you financially, it sounds, John.
Oh, absolutely. Even before we were married. You know, I helped her with, you know, we were engaged while she was going to get her master's degree, and I helped her do little jobs to pay for that, you know, to pay so she could complete that.
John, let us pick it up right there. If you'd be good enough, if you'd be kind enough, Douglas Doherty, what do you hear in this? Is this a common story now, and how is a judge likely to hear this story? I'm reading about lots of people, and of course they're mainly men, who've lost jobs going to court saying, give me relief, give me help here. You hear John's story in New York. How does it strike your ear, Douglas?
Well, I think, as Professor Wright said earlier, every situation really needs to be looked at individually.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, many people do tend to be complainers. And sometimes, even if they've gotten a good deal, they personally and subjectively do not think of it as a good deal, and they're unhappy with it. There are certain people who, if they would get a wonderful order, they still would feel, perhaps because of hostility towards their former husband or former wife, that they should have gotten more.
But we have the outlines of a changed social story here, where his wife is earning more than he is, and so he doesn't feel like the big breadwinner, but he feels like the big payer.
Well, in the state of Ohio, if jurisdiction has been properly reserved, an individual can sometimes go back to court and seek a modification of a prior order.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if his wife, he mentioned that she obtained a master's degree during the marriage. If that master's degree led her to a career with a significantly higher income, and that income has gone up significantly since the time of the divorce, it may be, again, depending on the other factors, that he could go back to court at this point in time and ask that she be ordered to pay additional spousal support to him, or pay some spousal support to him, or that he be ordered to pay less to her. Again, the devil's in the details, and every case is unique.
And I've got to think that if alimony wasn't out there, women might think twice, even more than they do today, about the cost to their career, their earning power of raising children. Let's go to Beacon Falls, Connecticut, and Veronica on that front. Hi, Veronica. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, I made a decision to leave my career to stay at home with my children. I decided that I wanted to nurture and raise them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if alimony laws change, I wonder what impact that may have on a parent's decision to stay at home with their children.
Whether they would think twice about it in the first place. Jennifer Levitz, did you see any of that in your reporting show up? Women thinking, you know, sort of doing the math here on the cost of child-rearing years?
I did hear people saying things like that. And interestingly, I also heard from a lot of people who said that they might hesitate to marry a divorced man who has alimony payments now.
Because he's coming encumbered already.
Yes, because in Massachusetts, some women have formed a group called the Second Wives Club.
Because their lives are going to be touched by whatever the first arrangements were.
And they are being, because during the recession, as some of these men have lost their jobs or their incomes have gone down, they've gone back to court to modify their agreements. And I, like, for instance, I talked with one woman who they went back to court, and the judge said to her, said to him, what about your second wife? she can work. She can work more.
Oh, to
she
help
can
pay the alimony to the first one.
Yes. So she's now, she works with him during the day at their printing shop, but now at night she's tutoring 4 nights a week to help him make his alimony.
So she has a second shift in order to pay alimony to the first marriage to Danae, right? I mean, this just gets more and more interesting. She has that earning potential. Now it's being applied back to the first wife. Whose rights come first here, Danae? Is the first wife more deserving than the second spouse, let's say?
Well, I on one hand, you would say, well, you know, maybe she should have checked into his obligations before she got married, the second wife. But I think we need to think a little bit about this concept of permanent alimony a little bit better, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. What people seem to be complaining about is this length of time that the alimony can go on. But if we had a rule that said you only get 3 years, that's the absolute maximum, there's going to be some people who unjustly are going to lose support and are going to fall into welfare and are going to have a very difficult time. If instead you said, okay, it'll be 3 years, but then the spouse receiving alimony has to come back and make a case for why he or she should have the alimony continue, that person is usually the economically least advantaged person. And the cost of getting a lawyer and going back to court to repeat and renew the alimony award is cumbersome. So instead, the court says, well, we'll just give it permanent alimony, but if the spouse who's paying the alimony, there's changed circumstances that the spouse receiving the alimony no longer needs it, or there's changed circumstances in the one paying the alimony, that person, who is usually going to be the better off person anyway, better able to go to court to make an adjustment, can then go to court and ask for an adjustment in the alimony. So there's a logic there to the permanent alimony. It's not an absolute rule. It can generally, as Mr. Doherty said, be adjusted.
But the stories sometimes clang on our ears as earning power shifts over time, as gender roles shift, even though, as you say, there are major investments made by very often women early on. But Jennifer, you've got the story of the Pierces, another story of a divorced couple here, which is kind of interesting on this front of, you know, I mean, they split up more than $1 million in assets. He was ordered to pay her alimony of $110,000 until remarriage or death.
That's right.
And that story goes on.
Right. He was ordered to pay her the $110,000 a year, and then he wanted to retire, and he went back to the court saying he wanted to terminate alimony because he felt she could take care of herself. She, until last fall, had a job making about $95,000 a year, and he said, you know, we're equally situated pretty much, and, you know, we had divided our assets, and so...
Let me retire. Don't keep me chained to this payment forever.
And the court... did reduce his alimony, but said, no, you can't terminate it because you're so well educated and you still have a lot of earning capability left, and you could be a professor, you could consult, even though he hadn't said that these opportunities were available to him or he planned to do that.
Even if you leave your big job, your law firm, you could go out and do something even in retirement.
Right. And so... that case is now at the state's highest court, which is expected to rule any time on whether he can terminate his alimony. And whether the issue is whether it's right to attribute income to a person in retirement.
In other words, even when you retire, you should still come up with the income to pay alimony.
Right. That's the issue they're looking at, whether you can that's the problem many people see with a lifetime income, is you're saying that this person is going to have an earning, the payer will have earning capability all their life. Now, her lawyer says, well, look, she did work during their marriage, but she devoted more time. She was the primary caretaker. She worked for 27 years at IBM, but she didn't work there long enough to get some of the pension benefits that she might have, and that she made a lot of sacrifices.
Let's get a caller along those lines, maybe. Howard in Boston. Howard, you're on the air.
I'm going to try to remain as calm as I can. I'm pushing 72 years old. I had a divorce decree back in 1995. Since approximately 15 years, I've given my ex-wife approximately close to $1 million in alimony. Yet, I'm retired. She's coming back, assuming that I cheated her over those 15 years. They're trying to come up with, I read the court decree, a third of my base salary plus commissions. All of a sudden, they're starting to say, well, wait a minute now. Does the auto reimbursement count as income? Does the 401k contribution start as income? It's an ever-ending cycle. And all I can say, as one on the other side, and the loser, on the defendant side, that the probate system is broken. I know it's broken in Massachusetts. I can't say for the rest of the states. But why should my ex-wife come after me? I'm pushing 72 years old, thinking that she's entitled.
But have you managed to retire, Howard, in the face of that alimony?
I was forced to retire based on that. I had a forced retirement because of the downsizing of my company.
Right, right.
I'm not working. I'm collecting unemployment.
Right.
And yet she's coming after me for alimony, you know, for what she presumes that I owe her from the past and maybe for the future.
Yeah.
It's a never-ending vicious cycle, and the system is broken in Massachusetts.
Howard, we hear it, and there's a lot of conversation right across the country. Douglas Doherty, I mean, as boomers head into retirement years, and fairly deep into them here, we're talking about people in their 70s, is this a story that you're hearing in your practice? You know, people who can't retire because of alimony or even in retirement, you know, especially with 401k nest eggs down and everything else, they may be struggling to come up with their legally obligated payments here.
Absolutely, Tom. The retirement scenario is very difficult. It's very tricky. Most of the time when people divorce, they're not divorcing when one or both are retired. Usually they're in their working career, sometimes very young in their working career. So when we have a divorce decree issued that contains an alimony order, there's often the assumption that the husband is working, the wife is working. And sometimes judges just basically say, well, we'll wait until another day to determine what we do at retirement. And in many instances, the judges will not address what we'll do in retirement. And that approach puts the burden on the parties to file a motion to modify. You know, if you don't like it anymore, mm-hmm. come back to court and we'll take a second look at it. The problem is, in many instances, there's an argument over, well, what does retirement mean? And what does it mean when one spouse is 10 or 15 years older? What does it mean when one spouse wants to work longer, even if they're the same age? You know, I think most mm-hmm. people agree that during their working career, they set aside assets. And at some point in time, they'll stop working and they will live on those assets. And the man or the woman who has given half of his or her assets to a former spouse says, hey, wait a minute, if I'm retired now, my former spouse has half the assets. That's what they should be living on. I'll live on my half. There should be no more alimony.
But it doesn't sound like it's quite that clean very often. Not for Howard. Joanne in Boston. You're on the air, Joanne.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I have to say I listen to you often rebroadcast in the evening. As you know, you're on in Boston in the evening. I can't cook dinner without you.
Okay. Well, I bet you could, but I'm glad to be there. What do you think, Joanne?
The way I think about this, and I think Professor Wright did address this in the historical context, and I think it's still true in some cases, the example of my parents is that my father was a doctor and my mother stayed home during all the time he was in training and in medical school and all that, and she took care of the kids mm-hmm. in the home. And he then had an income which he couldn't have managed without her doing all those other things. And, you know, so that was something I think that the feminist movement gave us, is that we recognize that work, that whether
the value of that work,
either member, mm-hmm. that work has value mm-hmm. that makes the income possible. And so, you know, I think about it, the analogy is like a house. It's not really a matter of, you know, what your future potential is or what, you know, sort of the moral standing of the spouses or whatever, but that if you jointly buy a house with somebody and you each contribute to that house in a certain proportion, that when you sell the house, you're each entitled to that proportion of the money back according to what you put into it. And so it seems to me that the fair way to do this is to calculate, you know, the proportion that each person put in that enables the value that the marriage had at the point that it ended, and then come up with a way that the person who actually has the physical money gives that money in proportion back to the other person who didn't earn the money.
Of course, that means putting a value on everybody's activity, whether it's a woman's big career, which pays very well, or a man's, or a woman raising children at home, or these days a man raising children at home while the woman's working. Danaya Wright, do you feel our national system here keeping up with the sort of social evolution? Or are they staying on the same page?
No, I don't think they're staying on the same page. People are progressing in very different ways. I do want to make a comment, though, about the divorce and the equitable distribution of property at divorce. Mm-hmm. Is that very rarely is an equitable distribution going to adequately sort of settle once and for all, pay back the spouse who's invested in the other spouse's career. Mm-hmm. Because these, especially early marriages that end fairly early, the couple hasn't accumulated enough wealth. So the property distribution by itself is not enough to justify, to compensate for the investment.
Right.
But if you have a fairly discretionary, flexible system that allows for people to go back to court to make modifications, then it seems to me you can at least try to minimize the hardships.
Well, it's an absolutely fascinating sort of meeting of the law and changing mores. We'll be watching in Ohio and Florida and Arizona and Georgia and North Carolina as Jennifer Levitz reports, as they all wrestle with this in their legislatures. Jennifer with the Wall Street Journal, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Danaya Wright at the Florida University of Florida Levin School of Law. Thank you, Professor Wright.
Thank you.
And Douglas Torty in Columbus, Ohio. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for being with us. Good luck out there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
He said that that would never do. He thought I was a phony. The first thing that I said to the judge was, I want alimony. His pocketbook he threw away. He fed on stale baloney. For every time he got